Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state. This episode is brought to you by Noom. Forget one-size-fits-all diets. With Noom, you get a personalized weight loss plan that's tailored to your lifestyle. No food is off-limits. Enjoy your favorites while discovering healthier habits. Noom's users love the flexible approach, blending psychology and biology to help you lose weight in a way that's sustainable for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 416. What is your face in your phone about?
What?
Why is your face on your phone?
No. I just don't want to be like Matt, that's just trying to get his voice out there in every single episode as much as he can. I'm kind of more comfortable with myself, so I'm cool with just being quiet here.
Well, but you just
I'm not the kind of guy that's going to just keep on talking to have his voice heard on any kind of thing.
So you're not that kind of guy.
I'm not that, you know, the kind of guy
that
would
just
keep on. What? I'm sorry?
You're doing it right now.
No, I'm not that kind of guy. Thank you so much, Kyle, for the coffee.
And a banana.
And a banana.
And you let him use your credit card?
It's a debit card. It's even worse. Yeah. And I always forget my pin, so I write it on the back, of course.
Well, a lot of stuff happening at Nerdist. You're performing at the Punchline soon, is that correct?
Yes, October 10th through 12th, I'll be doing the Punchline in San Francisco with Nick Youssef.
Oh, nice. Nick's great.
Nick is great, and we'll be there, and I have some limited edition posters made by Garrett Ross that I'll be selling.
Look at this little guy headlining. At Midnight is starting on October 21st, so that's Comedy Central Midnight. It's the Twitter handle and the time that it's on and the name of the show. It's all wrapped up in one convenient name, At Midnight, right after Colbert, starting October 21st. Please watch it. I'd like to thank Audible for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Audible.com/Nerdist. If you've listened to an audiobook, you probably have listened to Audible. It was probably an Audible audiobook.
Sounds about right. Yeah, it's the only kind I hear. Most audiobooks are Audible.
No, but that's the name of the company,
if it's
too.
It's not Audible, turn the volume up.
No, I understand, Jonah. No, if it's not Audible, turn the volume down because it should be Audible.
Yes.
.com.
There it is.
For sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. They have over 100,000 titles to choose from, every genre. Audible has it covered. That's audible.com/Nerdist. Use that for a free audiobook download. So our guest today is Adam Scott, who you probably know from Parks and Rec or Party Down or a million other things. Adam really is infuriating because he's super handsome, really funny, hyper-articulate, really smart guy. He's pretty much everything.
Yeah, he's a good dude. I used to work with his wife, Naomi.
And he's a good dude.
Yeah.
He's nice, too.
He's very nice.
Fucking asshole
for
being nice and smart and brilliant and talented and attractive. But his new movie, ACOD, opens today, October 4th. So go see it, Adult Children of Divorce. And here's Adam Scott on the Nerdist Podcast, number 416.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I will not eat this during the thing.
No, you
unless
should.
You want me to.
We're actually cataloging for our Foley division of Nerdist, so we need...
And we have very specific sound effects. One of them is Adam Scott eating an apple.
Oh, that's so crazy I brought this.
It really is perfect.
I mean, it's just the last one we were trying to get, too.
I am so glad you got that email I sent
to your
manager.
An organic golden delicious? Okay, great.
Yeah. And then later we'll do Gala and Granny.
Fantastic. I have to go home to get the Granny, though. Is that cool?
Yeah, that's fine. It's worth it.
That's what we're here for.
We've been following you for a while, just collecting life Foley.
That's great.
From you.
That is great.
And when we recreate you.
Me shifting in bed.
Wait till you hear you buttoning a shirt.
It's incredible.
I can't wait.
At bottom to top.
Yeah. Do you have me waking up with an iPad on my face with Friday Night Lights blaring in my earphones?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's listen, this project has taken several years and close to $10 million.
Yeah. But $10 million.
It's really worth it.
We actually have you reacting to the entire Peter Berg catalog.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Your battleship sounds are amazing.
So
okay, even for an improv, that was a weird pull. The entire Peter Berg catalog.
What?
Were you guys with me when I was alone at the Arclight watching Pain and Gain?
Yeah. We were back there. We also, weirdly, we have you reacting to First Run Chicago Hope.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Why do I know so much about Peter Berg's career?
Does that also count with the Linda Fiorentino movie, the last...
That whole 911 call.
Last Seduction.
Yeah, that whole 911 call.
Which, by the way, is a fucking great movie.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Do you remember? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Oh, it's so good.
John Dahl made some great movies. He did Red Rock West, too, which was so good.
That one,
remember
I have not
that
seen.
One? Oh, it's so good.
Well, what happened?
Hang on. We'll just play a clip of him watching it.
And it's just him going, this is so good.
In 1995. Wow, this is terrific.
The audio quality's not great. You know, it was 95 technology. Right. It was much harder back then.
Also, my wool flannel shirt kind of rubbed up against the mic.
Yeah, we got that taken out in post, actually. So
wow.
We
you
can
guys,
do a lot now.
You think of everything.
Well, yep. We have a wool filter that takes any wool sounds.
That's where all the money went.
That's where a lot of it went, yeah.
Guys, you might know kind of Adam Scott as the bridge officer of the Defiant in Star Trek First Contact.
That's right.
That is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Two lines.
I love First Contact, too, by the way. First Contact is a fucking great movie.
Huge success.
Yeah.
That was a big hit at the time.
It was giant for Star Trek, especially.
I love that Jamie Cromwell.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. He just got an Emmy.
He's got an Emmy, which, I got to say, he was pretty fucking great on American Horror Story. He was pretty great on that show.
What has it been that he wasn't great in?
I've never seen him be bad in anything.
I haven't seen American Horror Story.
It's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very silly, but the actors are so fucking good on it.
Yeah.
That it's a blast to watch. I dig it. I'm looking forward to the new one.
So what was your reaction when you read the script and you're like, oh, I get to say there's another ship coming in? It's the Enterprise. Good read, by the way.
I auditioned for some other part, like one of the...
Lieutenant Hawk, I'm guessing.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's probably what you auditioned for.
No idea. But...
Well, Matt's just going to tell you whether you like it or not.
It was a much larger part, obviously.
That's Lieutenant
Hawk. Who played Lieutenant Hawk?
McDonough.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was the
part.
Yeah,
it was. I know.
Yeah, I was right. Why even go through this charade of trying to figure it out?
I mean, everything you're saying is just a waste of energy right now, since I know what you're... I know.
I was with you. I was recording your voice during the audition.
Been there since before the inception of the Nerdist Foley department. I was like, someday.
And then... and so I went and did that smaller part and... was literally in and out of there. You know, I was out by like 11 a.m. It was really... because Jonathan Frakes was directing it.
Yeah,
he
sure
Frakes.
He was super cool.
He's the best. Love that guy.
How many other ones did he direct?
Insurrection and First Contact were the two Trek movies he did. He did a bunch of the episodes, though. Really good ones.
Was Insurrection the last one of the kind of... Of that crew?
No, that was Nemesis.
That's right.
Insurrection was the second to last one, which is not a great movie. And there's a commentary track that Frakes recorded with Marina Sirtis that they just make fun of the movie the entire time about how bad it is, but Paramount has never released it.
Oh.
Really?
Like, they recorded the for the DVD, and they were like, we can't put this on. I want to get a hold of it so bad.
Have you ever had Frakes do Star Trek?
No, he's very busy right now. He'll be free after Christmas.
Matt does a fun show here at Meltdown called Star Trek, where they basically watch the worst Star Trek episodes.
Awesome!
Kamal and I do it.
Great!
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun.
And what about Nemesis? Who directed Nemesis?
That was Bird. Who?
Just a bird.
That was his last name is Bird.
his
last name is Bird.
Oh, Simon Bird.
No,
Simon Bird's a young British actor.
Look it up.
Simon Birch?
Yes, it was Simon Birch, that wonderful little kid who charmed us all.
It was Simon, the kid. Now you know my name is Simon, and I like to direct Star Trek movies. Well, the Mike Myers thing.
It says Stuart. It's
Baird.
Stuart Baird. Now, the Simon thing, just to go off on a tangent that no one's going to give a shit about, that character that he did in an SNL, I don't think was accidentally based on a character from the Captain Kangaroo show, which was a little kid who would draw these pictures that would come to life. And it was the same song. He would go, "Now you know my name is Simon, and the things I draw come true." And so it was. I always remember watching Mike Myers going, okay, is he doing an homage to that?
Right.
Or is he remembering a character? Or is it a satire of that? Right. Look it up, Katie.
Well, it's Mike Myers, so he was obviously referencing something.
He might have been referencing something.
Wow, I haven't seen Captain Kangaroo or thought about Captain Kangaroo for quite some time.
So I'm a little lost now, but Captain Kangaroo directed Insurrection?
Yeah. Now, Stuart Baird, who was an editor previously to that, that was the first thing he directed.
Well, he's directed other movies
since,
too.
Yeah.
But why did all those ping pong balls fall on Picard?
What? I don't even...
Sorry. It's a Captain Kangaroo reference.
Oh, okay. All right.
Come on, you should remember this. We're close to the same age.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I don't know. I do not remember the ping pong balls.
Why can't you remember the things that I remember?
No, thank you.
Why don't we have the same brain?
Why are we different beings?
Thank you for finally getting the audio of Adam not getting a joke.
But success! It's hard to get one by him, too.
Yeah, no,
so
it's hard.
It's taken a long
time. It's been a long time.
You've been after that one 4 years.
Oh, so long.
I am your wife.
What?
There's no...
Katie, isolate this!
Cool visual gag for the podcast.
It's all been a lie. Now get your ass to Mars.
Did you get to keep your uniform? I would have asked for it on Star Trek.
Oh, no.
You could have stolen it.
Again, I was there for like 2.5 hours.
You could have fit it in a knapsack.
I probably could have.
Yeah.
It is cool. It's a cool looking uniform, right?
Yeah, that was a good one.
And I had like blood on my face and stuff.
Yeah, he'd been through some shit on the Defiant
Bridge. Does the ship blow up?
The Defiant gets saved.
It gets saved,
yeah.
Okay.
It was adrift, but salvageable because Deep Space Nine was still on.
I hope we just talked to Adam for an hour about the 2 hours that he spent. We will talk the same amount of time that he worked on Star Trek.
The 30 seconds of
just
screen
a moment
in real time.
A moment by moment. Well, I showed up.
It was 1996.
You've been working, I think, maybe longer than I have, which feels like a really long time. When was your first gig?
My first gig was the fall of 93.
Which?
When was...
94.
94. Yeah, yep. It was around, because I remember watching Singled Out in my gross apartment on Franklin.
So many people.
Across from Gelson's.
So many people share that story.
Yeah.
You cleaned up nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did clean up nice.
Thanks, Scientology.
The building is still a little shaky, I think. But it's hard to tell.
Yeah, that's right across from the UCB Theater. Mm. For people who aren't Los Angelinos.
Yeah.
That's really funny that you watched, that you remember Singled Out.
Yeah, so that was 95, right?
Yeah.
Singled Out? Yeah.
Yep, 95.
Yeah, so fall of 93, it was a pilot, MTV's first, like, narrative show called Dead at 21. Do you remember?
I remember Dead at 21.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I think there was a guy named Jack Noseworthy.
Yes, he was the star of the show.
He was the star of the show.
Yeah.
That's his real name?
Jack Noseworthy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember him, Dead at 21. Was it a ghost show? What was the show about?
It was actually a cool idea. It was, I may not remember correctly, but it's... The government has inserted microchips in a number of young men across the country to use them as secret agents or some experiment. But the thing is that the chip will kill you when you turn 21. And so this show kicks off and Jack Noseworthy is finding out that he's one of these government...
He's got to fight to save his life before he turns 21.
He has to find out like the secret.
So it's almost like an MTV Logan's Run in a weird sort of way.
Why not go?
Boy, their programming sure changed.
Yeah, they've really, really expanded. Because now it's Teen Wolf, which is...
Now their programming makes you feel dead at 21.
Right.
Dead at 21 babies.
Was that... That wasn't on at the same time as Single... That was pre-Single
Out. It came on a little bit before, but I do remember... I remember working at the beach house that summer.
And interviewing Lisa Dean Ryan and Jack Noseworthy.
Yes, I absolutely did. Yeah. I literally did interview them at the beach house that summer, which I think was 94, which was right before Singled Out. I started a show in the winter, and then it got canceled, and they had me VJ for a summer, and then I started single out in the fall. That I absolutely did Lisa Dean Ryan and Jack Noseworthy.
You VJ'd for a summer?
I did, at the beach house.
Wow. That must have been so fun.
It really wasn't.
Really?
Because apparently by the time I got there, I heard these stories about how in the old days.
Oh, yeah.
But MTV was very corporate by the time I got there.
Okay.
And so it was basically in this this town in Long Island called Quag. And it was this house.
Oh, so it wasn't Malibu.
It wasn't like, I thought
Malibu
it was
Malibu was 97.
Uh-huh.
This was in 95. And, or 94. 94, 95.
Okay.
And 94, I think. And so this beach house was just this isolated house. They had like maybe 15 sexy extras, let's call them. And they made it, they would just crowd them into the corner of a pool and shoot it really tight. And you'd be like, it's crazy here at the beach house.
Wow.
But it wasn't. And most of the time, the house was really boring. And there was, you know, like maybe there was an NES system there. But it was, there wasn't really much to, you would go hang out. You would get there and go like, it's going to be fun to hang out here all day. Yeah, it was just a house.
But like, that's so weird. So there wasn't an actual party going on.
No, not at all. They were very much. And then when they weren't shooting, if people started to get rowdy, they'd be like, hey, take it down, Tony.
At what point did you stop being polite and start getting real?
When I was on The Real World. Yes.
And was that when someone, did it take them, you know, 17 years to go, hey, see these extras here at the New Jersey Beach House? Maybe we should just make a show about them, and it would be wildly successful.
Well, by that point, Real World was already on. Real World premiered in like 92, I think.
Right.
And
haven't they said they're going to wind it down? Like they're doing like one or two more seasons and then...
But is Jersey Shore still on?
No.
That ended.
The problem with Jersey Shore was they should have recast every year. What I think.
In the early days of MTV, it really was sort of a like an indie kind of a free-for-all.
Right.
And then it got very Viacom-y and corporate-y. And so I think at some point in the early days of the beach house, you could, you know, like at any given moment, people would be jumping off the roof into the pool. And then they were like, liability.
Yeah.
And so then it became a very, very, very controlled environment. MTV tricked people in the 90s so hard.
Yeah, I remember seeing the Dave Matthews Band going, man, that looks like a fun time. Was that? That wasn't Long Island.
That might have been a spring break.
Oh.
Might have been spring break, and if that was the case, it would have been in Panama City, Florida.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Boy. All that stuff that back then I was like, God, I wish I could be a part of that. Now it all sounds nauseating.
It was very,
and exhausting.
It was very sterile, and if you worked a spring break, MTV was so cheap that they would literally try to fly you out the same day that you worked, if they could.
Wow.
So there wasn't really a... You know, truthfully, I think the people that probably had the craziest stories were the PAs, because they were the ones that basically worked like 20 hours a day.
Right.
And so they were kind of like in it all the time.
Right.
And so they were probably the ones that had all the crazy sex stories and drugs and stuff.
Right.
But if you were talent on the channel, at least for me, it was very much like get in, get out.
Yeah.
You know.
Where did they put you up? In Panama City, Florida, during spring break. It must have
something
sucked.
Across from a Waffle House.
Because really
every other building there was a Waffle House and a strip club, just in an alternating current.
Dude, that sounds so awesome.
It really was. I mean, I remember going one year to a spring break the year before I started working for MTV. It happened. They did one in San Diego. And I was like, I had the same reaction of you of like, man, this is going to be the life.
Right.
And then I got hired by MTV and I was like, shit's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
And shit was not crazy.
Oh, that's so disappointing.
Shit was very controlled.
Because also back then, like, early mid-90s, MTV was at a new sort of peak. It was really dictating a lot of culture. We were all sort of just locked in, whether we admitted it or not. MTV was really sort of guiding a lot of young culture. Like, they grabbed the alternative music thing and just sort of then kind of just ran with it and created a whole
They decided to kill hair metal. They were like,
Well, it's funny now because when you look at MTV is 32 years old, maybe.
No.
And it really does kind of seem like a 32-year-old guy now, where it's like at one point when it was in its 20s, it's like, hey, yeah, this is, you know.
Right.
Hey,
I was never like that.
But now it's just that the programming was a little more effortless.
Yeah.
And I think now they're just like, oh, what do you kids like? Girls like the beach? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it just feels.
They could just run Catfish all the time and I'd be happy.
God, that's right. That show does pretty well, too.
I love that show. You ever watch it?
I watched I've watched, like, I've sat down and watched, like, one of the marathons of it. Watched, like, seven in a row. and I'm just like, what? It's always, always just someone in a shack in the back of a back lot of a house.
Yeah.
It's always the exact same person.
It really,
essentially.
Yeah, they all sort of fit the same build and personality type and have the same insecurities. And it's always that person.
But it stays interesting.
Yeah, there was one that I watched not maybe a couple of weeks ago, but the girl who was kind of heavy herself, she was like, I love this guy. He's first guy that's like loved me for me, and like he's seen pictures of me, and he's still into me, and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, well, how many pictures do you have of him? And he's like, two. And they show the pictures, obviously, shirtless, ripped guy.
Yeah.
So they're like, you want to meet him? Yeah, we'll take him over. So they get there, and the guy's just this huge guy. Like, he's like, 6'3", but he's, heavy. He's a heavy kind of fat guy. And the girl just immediately shuts down and, like, doesn't want any part of the fat guy.
You know what's interesting about that is that, well, first of all, the guys who created that show,
Neve and Max,
Henry and Rel, like the guys who directed Catfish movie, are fucking really great guys. I worked with them, and they're really, really good guys. So I'm glad that show's doing well. But it sounds like the mechanism of that show is the moment, that end moment on Singled Out, when the contestants would spin and be like, you could just watch the disappointment just kind of like flow down like a waterfall from the top of their head and just all the way down their limbs. You could was just like they just melted a sadness candle.
Do you think Singled Out resulted in any marriages?
No. No, not one. No, we tried to force a
marriage,
like an engagement.
We did it. We did
like a Maharishi
pre dating show, pre like reality dating show.
Yeah,
in like '96, we made this video called "The Dirt on the Dates." It was a VHS tape.
Oh, I would get that. Yeah, sure.
And Jenny and I hosted these wraparounds for these couples. That the idea was. It was basically what Blind Date ended up becoming. We started at the moment where the couples saw each other and then followed them on a date.
And this is the date that they won on the show.
That they won on the show, yeah. And it just...
Never
went well. It was so engineered.
Oh, Roger Lodge would have loved that.
Well, people came on the show to win fucking snowboards on TV. Yeah, they didn't, it was just...
What, they weren't there for love?
They were not there for love.
That's disappointing.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take the...
Blind Date was terrific. Why did that disappear?
It was there for a long time.
There's no reason for that not to still be there.
I know.
It's such... The premise will never die.
Roger Lodge, I think, made a lot of money from that show.
Good for him.
Because I think he had a piece of... God damn it. Have you ever worked in syndicated television before?
No.
If you can hit syndicated television right, there's so much fucking money in it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, like you hundreds of millions of dollars if you hit it right.
Yeah, Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld are billionaires because Seinfeld is still on all the time, and their syndication deal was like $2.5 billion.
Well, that's even a slightly different syndication setup than if you had a show that just lived in not a show that went to not second run syndication,
like Arsenio Hall,
like a first run syndication show, like
Star Trek,
like
Next Generation,
Oprah, or.
Was Star Trek syndicated?
Yeah. Next Generation was syndicated.
Oh, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
They made a shit ton of money.
Oh, good for them.
And that was in the days where people were really making money. Yeah. Would you ever wish, like, fuck, why couldn't I have been on something in the 80s where they were just fucking shelling out music, television, like everyone just piles of money.
Oh, my God. If I... Do you ever think about the position you're in if you were in that position in 1987?
Oh,
I mean, good Lord.
It was just different.
It was very, very different.
I mean, the days of, hey, you got this one job and it changed your life, and then you went from zero to millionaire in a week. Like, that doesn't.
Nope.
Nope.
You have a better chance of winning the Powerball.
Yeah. Yeah. You really do. It's kind of bummery.
But I do feel like that the current state of – here's one thing that you wouldn't be able to do because you, Adam Scott, work on a lot of really fantastic stuff. And in 1987, you would not have – first of all, the technology wouldn't have been available to do a lot of stuff that you do. But you would not have been able to do all those things because one network would have been like, well, you can't do anything else. You're just a TV guy.
Yeah. That's the thing, is that now there's way more work and way more possibilities. And for kids starting out, you can just make a video and put it on Funny or Die. And if it's great, then Adam McKay will watch it, you know, like if it's like really terrific. And so that kind of stuff wasn't available. So, you know, in a way, I'm glad that we're here at this time, because you're right. Like, we get to do all kinds of different cool stuff. And no, you're not making a ton of money, but it's super fun. And I don't see it really changing. I see it expanding even more, you know.
Well, also, in the 80s, we had to have Simon and Simon so you and Ham could do the Simon and
Simon.
Right,
exactly. And also in the 80s, we all would have been coke addicts.
would have.
Wait, is your nose? You have a cold?
No, yeah. Well, it's a little congested.
You want some Kleenex? Yeah,
you're looking a lot thinner lately.
Thank you. So glad you noticed.
Yeah, that's true. We would have been totally. I really do feel it is sort of horrifying to think that something. I don't remember this shift from the 90s to the 2000s, but something happened from the 80s to the 90s where. Like, the second it was New Year's 1990, for some reason, culture was like, hey, are you from the 80s? Fuck you!
Yeah.
and that was it.
I remember, like, Octoong Baby was, I know that was, like, late 91, but for me, that was, like, just the 90s release.
At the beginning.
It was such a signifier of this is a new, just a new look, and things are shinier and weird. And
grittier. And
yes.
Yeah. And not neon.
Right, right.
And Bono's wearing those bug glasses.
Yeah, those glasses. Why did we notice that then? But now I feel like it all just sort of...
I know, I have an answer.
Shift.
I have an answer. Because pop culture is so unbelievably ubiquitous that it's like at that time we were only getting pop culture from a couple of outlets. And so it was very easy to see like, oh, that's what's coming out of this pipeline and that's what's coming out of this pipeline. But now we are living in the pipe.
Yeah.
And so it's just like everything's flooding by. And so it's, you can't really identify one. Our culture isn't one or two things anymore. It's we're a collection of niche cultures.
Hmm.
Much
in
the same way that Los Angeles is a collection of small towns.
Yeah. That's like why MTV was so powerful back in the early mid-90s or late 90s even probably, but because that was the one funnel we all had.
That was it.
Like you wanted to see the new Nirvana video or whatever, there was one place to go.
And they told you what time it would be on.
Yep.
And you would either tape it or watch it when it happened.
Yeah.
And if you didn't tape it, you're not seeing it again.
And they so missed the, you know, I don't know what happened, but MTV so unfortunately missed the boat with the internet stuff.
Yeah.
They just...
It was Viacom. I think that's kind of why. They were like, well, let's just do what CBS is doing because...
They could have expanded out and figured that out.
By the time
ahead.
They started trying to figure it out, it was like, oh, no, the internet's
already...
Well,
because MTV could be Vevo, you know what I mean? Like,
or, they could have been.
Yeah, like just whatever, that music video destination place.
And it was, you know, it was giant, you know, once again, like giant corporations not really understanding... The, you know, internet culture and being like, no, don't put your stuff there. We can't make any money on it. Squash that.
Yeah.
And then, oh, it's happening anyway without us.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
That's still, there's a lot of companies are owned by these big corporations, and it's hard to get your stuff online. And a lot of the companies are still sort of archaic in that way. It's really frustrating.
Well, because they're all middle-aged or older. Like, I mean, like, they're like, you know, guys in charge are like 65 years old.
They're not in the demographic of their consumers.
No.
That's why I feel like...
And I say middle-aged because we're all living to 120 now.
That's now
thanks,
hopefully
medical
science,
technology.
Hopefully science catches up with us.
I'm 400 years old.
Oh, you're
and
look
you look
great.
You know,
thank you.
Honestly,
we have missed out on so much audio.
If you told me you were a day-walking vampire, I would believe it. Because you look...
You do. You haven't aged, really.
People say to me, like, oh, you haven't aged since singled out, and I go, well, I see it, but you, Adam Scott, really have not aged.
Thank you very
Matt,
much.
Look at that hairline.
It's fucking gorgeous.
It's unbelievable.
I would kill for that
You are
hairline.
Set.
Gorgeous.
You're set
gorgeous.
For the rest of your life.
Chris, you have the same hairline.
No!
Was that audio of me saying that?
Yeah. We just played it back.
That's going to be my new ringtone.
Are we the same
age? I'm
older
than you by... 2 years.
Okay.
I'm very open about the fact that the day I can afford plugs, I'm getting them.
You know,
this is just going too far back.
I gotta say, I've watched some of the videos online, and the science of it fascinates me.
That was
a friend of mine had it done, and he explained the process, and I was like, I didn't know how it worked.
Yeah.
And he explained the process, and the idea is fascinating
to
me.
What is it? How did they do
it? Basically, there are two ways that they can do it. One way is that they either cut a strip along the base of your skull back here, like the hard part of your skull, and they essentially harvest hair follicles, and they replant them in the front of your head, and then it grows.
It grows.
And so the trick, I guess, like when you see guys who've had it done and you can tell, it's they've had someone who's more doctor than artist, and they just have that really weird, you know, like that John Travolta, like it just looks like he's wearing a Lego hair.
Right.
But I guess a good doctor, my friend explained to me, will figure out how to change the, you know, like make it look natural. But the other way that they do it is they can also go in and pull out follicle by follicle and replant follicle. It's fucking, the science of it is fascinating.
So they, in order to replant a hair, though, they have to find an open follicle to plug it into? Or
they can just stick it in the head?
Stick it, it'll go.
Oh, that's so weird.
It is interesting. And like, I've been thinking about it for quite a while because this just keeps going. And the top of the crown here, the Rogaine's not doing everything I need it to do.
Let me know if you do it because I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, no, of course I'll let you know if I do it. Why wouldn't I tell you?
I don't know. I mean,
I'm not going to make a secret about it. I say it on a podcast all the time. I'm getting hair plugs. Deal with it.
But you're going to keep it a secret. Yeah. From Chris.
But there's something about hair plugs that makes it sound fake. But it's not fake. It's your actual hair.
Yeah. They just move it for me.
It just sometimes looks fake when it's badly done.
Yeah. When it's badly done. Yeah.
Like I can remember the old Dennis Miller show, the HBO show, when he would come out and do the monologues, and then he would look in the monitor and he'd go, God damn it. And then he would say, I'm getting hair plugs here and here. And then you look at him now and you're like, yeah, he did it.
He did it.
Yeah. His hairline's a little bit thicker than it was and it looks good.
I don't think it's anything to be ashamed of. I think the science of it's fascinating. But Adam Scott will never have to do that unless he's in a chemical accident of some sort.
Ooh, what kind?
Which is going to happen this afternoon.
What? Can we get audio of it?
Yeah.
Speaking of Dennis Miller, I was in New Orleans this summer and I found an old, beaten up, talking Dennis Miller doll.
Oh, I've seen that.
You've seen
it? Was it just Dennis Miller?
Yeah. But the great thing about it is that it was made sometime in the last 10, 12 years because it says wildly right-wing crazy shit.
Did it not want to go off on a rant here?
Yeah, that is one of the things it says.
I saw one of those dolls at a Big Lots like 5 years ago, and I was like, should I buy this?
God damn it. Dennis Miller, I was so, you know, Dennis Miller was like my first great comedy.
The Off-White album.
The Off-White album is fucking, the Black and White album. It was Black and White, right?
No, the Off-White album. Yeah.
But his second special, Black and White, was the one where he's describing like the Merrill Lynch bull and it dragging making the penile rivulet in the sand. And it's like, it was before he became really aware of himself.
Yes.
And it just, that third special, I was like, oh no. He went back to DC and he's one of those guys that I always, I met him at MTV when he was hosting the VMAs in 95 that year.
And
he was really awful to me, and it was like my first great comedy disappointment of like, I worship you and you're a dick.
What did he do to you?
He was rehearsing, and the cool thing about the VMAs is that you could just go sit and watch the bands rehearse.
Yeah.
Like I watched, you know, I think Michael Jackson might have been on that year and Live
did
and R.E.M. and Hole.
That
and
awkward kiss with Lisa Marie?
No, that was before I got there.
Oh, I think I went and sat in the audience that year.
Did you?
Is that when R.E.M. did Everybody Hurts into the fast version of Drive?
I don't remember.
Did Lenny Kravitz perform as well?
He might have.
See, you were like at work and I was in the audience feeling so psyched to be like in a Universal Amphitheater?
No, this was in New York. This was at Radio
Different
City.
One.
Well, then forget it.
Sorry. So Dennis Miller was, Rick Overton was writing with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling Rick the story about how Courtney Love had a meltdown on stage earlier in the day. And Dennis was like, well, you're fucking making it worse, man. You're talking about her. That's what she wants. And I was like, I was just relaying a story to my friend. He was like, yeah, man, you're not helping. It was like one of those. But when you're sort of a young, nervous kid and you're a comedy nerd and a guy who is what he was Yeah. And he like kind of smacks you down. You're just like, I want to go disappear.
So essentially what he was doing is just criticizing the way you socialize with your friends.
Yes, he was criticizing the way that I was retelling this story that anyone would retell because she went fucking insane on stage and started yelling at her band because they hadn't finished setting up the equipment yet. And she was mad that her band wouldn't start playing. But they're like, we can't play. The instruments aren't plugged in.
Yeah.
And she had a tantrum on them. Hmm. So, but he was mad at me because he felt that I was perpetuating
whatever.
What their
Jesus Christ.
Thank you for being on my side. I'm going to go tell Dennis Miller a thing or two.
I think you're right, though. I think Black and White was the Off-White album. I think Off-White album was the audio.
Was the audio version
of the
Black. Because he shot it in Black and White. He shot it in Black and White.
Right.
Which was an interesting thing to do. But it was.
That album. I never actually saw Black and White. I just had the album and just listened to it constantly. It was so great.
Well, and I think what most people don't understand is coming out of the 80s comedy boom, there was so much like, I don't know, like no, like a lot of people, most comics didn't really say anything. Like they were funny,
yeah.
But they didn't really say anything.
Yeah.
Like that 80s comedy was sort of like, just entertain the audience at all costs.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, you had your Bill Hicks, but, you know, Bill wasn't super front and center of anything. And
right.
So Dennis actually was making commentary in his set, but it was really funny and the references were smart and it just – I loved it. And then it just – I did such a 180.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, he did a 180 and I followed.
You know, what do you mean? He's on Bill O'Reilly now.
I mean, come on.
It's great.
Have you met any of your comedy – who are some of your comedy idols?
Steve Martin.
Have you met him?
Yes. Steve Martin, Albert Brooks, and Letterman are like the trifecta of my,
have you met all of them?
Not Albert Brooks. No.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was
I've seen him.
How was Letterman? Was he nice to you?
Yeah, he was really nice. And, I even, when I was backstage, you know, you wait backstage, like any talk show, you wait to go on and the other guest is finishing. By the way, at the Late Show, it's so cool because it's not super fancy. I don't know if you've been there, but it's really
the old.
That's old.
Yeah, point. And they don't like spruce your room up with, you know, like these little danky dressing rooms, which is to me just so cool. Like everything was cool. But I was backstage and Kelly Ripa was finishing up her segment, and when she finished, Letterman looked over and he waved. Just waved to me like, oh, hey, how's it going? I'll see you in a minute or whatever. And I just lost my mind. Just the fact that you're in the room with this guy.
So great.
But yeah, then he was really great. He was really nice. Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
How was Steve? Was he shy?
No, he wasn't. He was really kind of normal and really nice and just kind of normal and funny and great.
You know what it is that you have a very good energy. Like you have a cool, chill energy, and I think people feel comfortable around you.
Maybe I was shitting my pants both times.
Actually, we have audio
clear
of that.
Hi, Steve.
It's so weird that he actually, when he shits his pants, it sounds like Chris making a poop noise.
Yeah, it is weird.
That was it.
Really weird.
Yeah. Could you play it again?
Yeah. Flurp, flurp,
yeah, yeah,
flurp.
Yeah. That's it.
Yep.
Hi, Dave.
Dave. It sounded just like Chris Hardwick. I don't understand why.
I think, unfortunately, I still have too much of the fan gene to be able to mash it down all the time. And I think people sense that sort of – I think sometimes people sense that kind of desperation of fandom in me that can sort of put them off a little
bit. I'm good at mashing it down.
Yeah.
Not, you know.
To the extent where you sometimes insult people.
Yeah. Like play it extra cool. Yeah. Yeah. I do that sometimes. I feel like if I just ignore them, then they'll think I'm cool, then I'm not like all over.
Well, or people... you just arbitrarily say, one thing I do is like if there's somebody coming on the podcast that I don't particularly know very well, I don't bother looking them up.
Right.
Because I just like, whatever, I'll just talk to you like a person.
Right.
But there is something where, you know, especially with really famous people, where I think they're so used to people being like,
yeah.
And I think what can be off-putting for them is that they are in the position of, they know that someone expects something from them. Yeah. They know that someone expects them to be a certain way or fulfill this idea that they could never live up to. And I think it makes them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So when someone like you comes along, it's like, hey, how's it going? You know, and they feel like, oh, okay, this is just a guy and we're guys.
Yeah. I don't know if that's what I don't know if that's what I did, but I just know they were both very polite and tolerated me for a few minutes. What about you? What are your kind of comedy heroes?
Steve Martin was the one. I mean, like the albums, I knew all the albums back to front when I was a kid, and you know, I think mine were was the pretty basic stable of. I mean, there are no surprises. It was like the specials I watched were, you know, Richard Pryor Live in the Sunset Strip or Eddie Murphy Delirious or the Kinison specials or when Emo Phillips came along, I was like, and Stephen Wright too, were just the two, oh my God, these guys are from totally, but I watched all comedy. I had no, like, as much as I'm kind of a comedy snob now, I had no snobbery back then. I would watch, you know, redneck comedy,
because it was whatever
smart
made
comedy,
you laugh,
like whatever.
What
yeah, exactly. So,
which is exactly what you should do when you're a kid, is just watch
absorb.
It all. Yeah, totally.
Absorb everything. Yeah. So, those are my, I think, my influences, I think, are pretty like what everyone's influences were who are our age.
Yes. Yeah. That first Kinison album is so great. By the way, I can't find that anywhere. I mean, on Amazon, it's like $400.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, it's nowhere. It's out of print and gone.
I'm guessing when the movie comes out, when the biopic comes out, they'll probably re-release it.
I'm actually surprised that someone like Rhino or someone, you know, like didn't release.
I'm sure their family's like sitting on it.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think.
Do you think there's a torrent of it out there?
Yes,
I'm sure there
is. There's no question.
Why am I not just? I've been looking.
Because that's illegal, Adam. Yeah. Why would you do that?
Yeah,
that's
I never ever do that.
Thanks for joining us, Adam. He had to go.
I did not watch the Homeland premiere, by the way, on torrent. I do not do stuff like that.
Well, now why would you go out of your way to say that if you didn't?
I'm just making sure everyone knows I did not do that.
Previously, no one was suspicious that you did.
Well, I could tell that was the next question, so I just wanted to get it out of the way.
Oh, okay. I don't.
I didn't watch it.
Yeah, no, we are way on your side.
So you haven't seen it. So if I were to ask you a question about it, you haven't
seen it. I wouldn't know.
Really? Let's talk about Mandy Patinkin for a second.
What would a person use to what software would a person use to torrent Homeland?
I have no idea.
I can't even remember. I haven't cracked open a torrent in a long. I haven't done it in a while.
I haven't either.
It's a pain in the
tomato
ass.
Tomato torrent, I think, was what I was using.
It's a pain in the ass because you inevitably get like
a chunk
7 to 10 ones that are bullshit.
Yeah,
you have to like figure. It takes a while.
Yeah. The other thing too is like when you get mislabeled, like you're like, why would someone put this weird porn video under the title of Top Gear? I just wanted to watch.
Well, now
Top
I have to masturbate. And then
you win again.
You've done it, Demon 93.
You're just jerking off in your other hand, trying to type. How dare you?
I can't believe you would think.
U-U-U-U-U-A-A-H.
And then thank you.
Now to find Top Gear. Oh, Jeremy Clarkson. Oh, Jeremy Clarkson in a band.
Torrents of Top Gear.
See, that was the only way I could get it in 2002.
Yeah.
That shit was great.
What is your background? Because you seem to have...
German? Irish?
Actually 100% German. I was born and raised in Germany and moved here in... No. I don't know.
I want to know what year you ended up on.
I mean, like, what's your comedy background? Because I know you started as... I mean, like, you've acted in a lot of stuff, and a lot of legitimate things. But, you definitely have
your... So comedy is not legitimate?
No. I'm saying, but you definitely have your foot in also, like, this sort of comedy world that we're all, this sort of UCB, alti comedy world that we're all a part of.
Right.
So I'm curious, was it always that for you, or did you have a comedy background, or was it just like, oh, I'm a funny guy and I'm an actor, and it just sort of worked out?
You know, I never really did. I mean, other than growing up watching all the stuff we were just talking about and Monty Python and all of that, I just wanted to be, like, a serious actor. And went to theater school and after high school, and then moved here in 93, like I said, and just started like auditioning and doing guest spots, and I just wanted to be a serious
Like in the early 90s, I wanted to be Ethan Hawke and Stephen Dorff. And like,
that's what everyone
dressed like them. Yeah. And, you know, just like most young actors in 1994, yeah. I was just wanting to be those guys.
You had a one way ticket to Loserville, USA. I'll tell you that much.
No, Ethan Hawke still does really awesome stuff.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, he does.
He's great. Yeah. I know that Stephen Dorff, that mid 90s, like the trench coat man with
totally.
The collar the flipped
cigarettes.
Up, the cigarettes.
Oh, yeah.
The boot. Hey man, we're all adults.
You mean you mean like Simon Pegg dresses in
yeah,
World's
yeah, as Gary, yes, yeah, as, yes, as Gary. Yeah. That's exactly that was our vision of that.
Yeah, Ethan Hawke is still awesome, by the way.
Yeah,
I'm sure Stephen Dorff is too. I don't know
Stephen Dorff. Yeah. I don't know Ethan Hawke either. But Ethan Hawke sort of. I feel like he could probably do. You know, he could probably do whatever. Not maybe not whatever, but for the most part, he could do what he wanted. But he picks these really cool little.
Yeah.
Kind of weird science-y
like Getaway with Selena Gomez.
No, but he did the reverse vampire one, which was really cool.
Yeah,
and those Linklater Before Sunrise, those are great movies.
Yeah,
you're not into them?
No, I am. Yeah. I'm trying to think of other stuff that he's done in the last few years. Like I don't
Assault on Precinct 13 is pretty good.
It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah. Yeah, I like how he does the like action movies.
Yeah.
And then little
Gattaca's great.
Gattaca's awesome.
Ethan Hawke, good job, Ethan Hawke.
Explorers
is terrific, isn't it?
Well, what I want to do is I want to hire a post house to recreate the last 5 minutes of Explorers because that's really where the movie fell apart for me. It's fucking awesome up until that, until they go into that alien world and it's just like that, yeah, we're these weird aliens. Like,
man, I haven't seen that in a long time. How do you think that would play for a six-year-old now?
I think it would play pretty cool because it's still – there are things that the six-year-old would understand. They're playing with computers and they create this bubble and it's – you know, like I think they would
– Do you have a six-year-old?
He's a seven-year-old, right?
No, I just like hanging out with six-year-olds. I have a almost seven-year-old
Are you
boy.
Are you trying to show him like the things you saw when you were seven?
I'm starting to. I just got Goonies. Mm-hmm. I've showed him all the Star Wars, of course, or the three from when we were kids. And then Explorers, I want to show him.
Neverending Story would be good.
Yeah. I remember hating that when I was a kid, though.
Really?
But I was like 12, so maybe I was too old for it. Is that what it was?
I didn't like it.
Listen, I don't know if it was good.
Yeah.
But it was definitely something from my childhood that I watched a million times.
You did, okay.
Show him Caddyshack. Fuck it. Just take him straight to...
Well, I do want to show him Three Amigos because Three Amigos is kind of has a cartoony look.
Yeah.
And there's enough like fart jokes and hilarious visual things that I think he would actually enjoy it.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I think Three Amigos is an excellent choice.
Yeah. Do you ever think of
showing him like any of the old, like Mel Brooks stuff or anything like that? Do you ever think maybe...
Because
that was sort of the age
Spaceballs would probably be the movie that a kid would gravitate toward the most, a six-year-old.
I mean, I could show him the fart scene in Blazing Saddles as far as, like, in the entirity of Blazing Saddles.
Really,
I'm not sure.
It was on this morning. I watched it this morning before I went to the gym, Blazing Saddles.
Madeline Kahn
was so fucking funny.
Yeah.
I'd say Spaceballs is probably the movie that a six-year-old would like the most.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Because of Pizza the Hut and Barf. And
when I was a kid, though, it was like PBS was like running a lot of like Sid Caesar show and like Marx Brothers stuff, and that's sort of what I got into. And then like I became obsessed with the Dick Van Dyke Show when I was like 9.
That show's great. Van Dyke Show was awesome.
It's so fascinating to watch now. A show with three acts and one story.
Uh-huh.
There's just an A story.
Right,
there is no B story whatsoever, and it plays for some reason. And it's just so simple and just so funny. And
Carl Reiner is there.
When he shows up, he's so fucking funny. Carl Reiner is so fucking
funny. Well, there was the philosophical shift. Like, before a sitcom became its own thing, it was basically just televised theater.
Yes.
And so they basically had to write a mini play every week.
That's what the Honeymooners was, and then do it live. Yeah. The Honeymooners was one set.
Yeah.
And I challenge anyone to find an episode of The Honeymooners that does not hold up or does not play. And it isn't just
completely entertaining. Well, when he threatens physical violence on his wife, I think that...
He's going to punch her in the face until she flies
to the moon.
I'm going
to
punch you so hard.
You are going to break free from Earth's gravity.
Yes.
Now, you're going to probably have to travel at about 25,000 miles an hour.
I've done a lot of math on this.
But it's going to happen because I'm going to punch you so fucking hard.
Now, and then he brings out the, if we can get the vertical thrust. Yeah. Now again, this is going to be.
And Ed's like, okay. He's setting up the.
Hey, you punched it pretty hard there.
Now here's the problem. We should be launching closer to the equator, but we're in New York. I'm going to have to take it from this
I'm going to have to punch you extra hard.
We're gonna go to the top of the Chrysler building.
Oh god, no! But the Dick Van Dyke Show, I think it's all on Netflix now. I have the DVDs of it, but it's all on Netflix now. So you should. I mean, I really recommend it to watch. It's like a show. It's a show about a comedy writer writing television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's why when I was a kid, I was like, oh, that's what I want to do.
Hmm. But the I Love Lucy's too. My mom watched I Love Lucy, and so I watched that, you know, pretty religiously.
I just saw the Harpo episode of I Love Lucy not that long ago.
Oh, where she dresses
it's
up like
pretty
Harpo.
Funny. Well, it's cool when they move to L.A. and they're in Hollywood, and you look out their apartment. They have that window, and you can tell the picture was just a picture someone took from standing on top of their stage at Paramount.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
The angle you can see
just right up to Hollywood.
Yeah, you see the Knickerbocker up there.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Now, you want to talk about that's the time to have been a television star.
Yeah, really.
When you know, like 20 million people would watch one show.
For 20. Sure.
Way more than
40,
that. Right?
More than 20?
Yeah.
40?
All the time.
20 was like Friends.
Yeah.
Or Big Bang Theory.
Still pulling in those numbers.
I would imagine Friends, I mean, it's probably easy to find out, but I'm sure Friends probably got like 25 million people every week.
Was it?
I don't know.
Was it that high?
I could be wrong.
Oh, they probably did like a... Yeah, they probably did like a... Well, I don't know what the share would be. What is that, a share? Like a fucking...
Well, the share... Do we know what the ratings numbers are?
They probably got
when
like
you get
a...
the two numbers?
You get the share of the audience that was watching television that night.
That's right.
Yeah.
You have the... Like one number is like of total... Like percentage of total potential viewers.
Yeah, they probably had like a 60.
And the share is like of the television sets that were on, they were watching this, you know, this percentage of... 60 is pretty high. I don't know if anyone had a 60 share.
Yeah. I would imagine they had like...
Nash did.
For the demographic, they probably had like an 11.5 in the 18 to 49. Or
you know,
whatever.
And the sad thing is like, it ain't going back.
No.
No.
Like,
no way.
It's just a constant, you know...
The only
like,
thing that goes up every year is the Super Bowl. That's
really?
The only thing that goes up every year.
It goes up?
Yeah.
Yeah, about like...
Jesus Christ.
If you had a show, if Parks and Rec did 21 million viewers,
that'd be amazing.
You would be doing that show forever.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, Big Bang Theory, why would they ever stop making that? I mean, they get Friends ratings now.
Yeah.
And that's like uncanny. Like, that's so admirable that they are able to.
Yeah.
I don't know how
CBS has cracked some sort of code that we will never all figure out. But did you see Maya Bialik and what's her face? What's the other girl
Kaylee?
On that show?
Melissa Rauch.
Yes. They just got a raise to $60,000 an episode. They were only making $2,000 an episode.
They weren't making $2,000.
That's not possible.
No, they were making probably
20.
Oh, no.
That's not possible.
Yeah, I read it. Oh, the scale, yeah, you're probably right.
That's not possible. They wouldn't have made $2,000
a week.
I was
like, this doesn't seem right.
Entry level...
But anyway, they did get a raise.
Entry level for a sitcom, for even unknowns, is like 15 to 20. Yeah. Like, they wouldn't have
gotten... Must have been 20, then.
It must have been 20. It
I
wouldn't
was
have
like,
been 2.
That is bonkers.
2 is internet money.
I thought it was
2
like,
is good internet money.
Yeah, no, 2 is great internet money.
That's not...
But I was like, that doesn't make any sense.
No.
But they did just get a raise to $60,000.
And 60 is still...
Which is still nothing compared to what... The other three are making.
But you know what's funny is that, you know, whenever this sort of salary disputes happen and then people go, the poor actors aren't. It's like, that money's not going to an orphanage otherwise.
Yeah.
That show is making $1 billion.
We were going to give this all to charity. But
it's the only time people ever side with a corporation. Like, that money's just going to go to a fucking corporation. They're making the money.
But also, with a show like that that's generating all that money, those actors... deserve that because they have a huge hand in the success
of
the show.
Of course they do.
And they are making, that company is making so much money.
And every one of those actors represents that show just in their lives. Like, it doesn't just end when they leave work. Like, they are those characters. They are those people nonstop. And so they should get to share. And it's basically, I think of it more as like a profit share as opposed to, I'm a spoiled actor who wants money.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I think the thing about the ratings never kind of going back is there's something good about it in that we get shows like Breaking Bad or Parks that, I mean, Breaking Bad now is kind of broken open, but shows that don't get these huge blockbuster ratings, but since the new normal is a bit lower and the audience is so much more spread out.
The new normal got canceled.
No, I'm talking specifically about the television show, The New Normal. That shows like that survive much longer than they would have, you know, 10 years
ago. Yeah, that's true. Like, they would. I was surprised when I looked back at the numbers of how long they kept Scrubs on the air.
Yeah.
Because that show was only pulling in like 7 million or 8 million.
Yeah.
But even, I mean, looking at that now, that's like huge. That's a huge number.
Yeah, and I also, it's also kind of cool that when networks are sort of recognizing, like, well, numbers are smaller and things, so they're starting to embrace the fact, like, they'll want you to do Adult Swim stuff. They'll want you to be at as many places as you can be because anything that you do that elevates helps the show.
Yeah.
And that is a fundamental shift in the old days of, like, you work for us, and if you work for anyone else, you will never work in this town again.
Yeah, it's crazy. I remember when I started Parks, I asked, and there was a thing about, like, you can only do 3 guest spot things for other shows per year or something like that. But I don't think anyone cares or pays attention to that at all, because I think everyone just figures everyone should just do whatever they want and can only help the network show or whatever. So I don't think anyone – I think that's an kind of archaic old thing and no one even abides.
And I would imagine with Party Down, they were probably like, hey, do whatever you want. Just as long as you can show up to work these days, then fine. Do whatever else you want.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But back when Party Down was actually on, no one was watching it. That kind of like the audience – found it after it was canceled.
Yeah.
How much stuff do you are you writing stuff as well, or how much stuff are you
I'm not really a writer. I mean, Paul Scheer and I wrote the greatest event in television history stuff together, the kind of making of documentaries that come before the greatest event in television history is this show that my wife and I created on Adult Swim, where we recreate opening credit sequences from like 80s television shows, and then me and Paul Scheer sort of write these making of documentaries that precede the actual thing. So, but writing is a loose term with those, in that we come up with something and then we shoot it, but we also we get awesome actors in there and everyone kind of improvises. And so my contribution to writing is pretty loose. Paul is an actual writer, so he knows how to sort of really do it. I take a really long time, but I do find it satisfying once I'm done. But actually doing it
Your wife's a writer, isn't she?
No, she's a producer.
She's a producer. Because I know she worked on Andy Milonakis.
Kimmel. Yeah.
Yeah.
I found working on those really fun, and Lance Bangs and I directed them together, and so I found that to be really, really fun.
Yeah.
Writing. I don't know. I don't know if I would ever have the attention span to really sit down. I would love to be a writer. I just don't know if I'm smart or calm enough to actually get it done.
Well, it just sounds like because I think you probably have no shortage of good ideas, that you would just need to get paired with someone who could sit down and actually like
for sure
help you craft the thing, or just actually do the typing and
yes
like yeah. what if we do this oh yeah, hey yeah, can yeah, I yeah, pick yeah. some ideas and
gets you easier know. Once the bones are there
yeah
and you sort of can work fill that out.
Yeah,
I'm good at filling out bones, guys.
You like it?
I love it.
Like
look
it
at me. I love getting at those bones. Fill I love filling bones. Them up.
Fill it up.
But I think the new sort of perfect career is kind of the Will Ferrell model of, hey, I kind of do whatever I want. Like, you know, if he wants to make an internet video, he makes an internet video. If he wants to do a movie in Spanish, he just does a weird movie in Spanish. If he wants to do a blockbuster movie, he'll do a big movie. Like, whenever I see that guy, I don't ever think, someone probably made him do that. I think, he probably just wanted to do that. You know,
yeah, sure, like the old Milwaukee commercial.
Yeah, exactly. He just wanted to do
it. That's one of my favorite things.
And
ever.
I think that's the perfect kind of career to strive for now, as opposed to the old days of like, oh, I want that one. Yeah. I want to be on Friends. You know, now it's like...
Chris, it's not going to happen.
It's never going to happen. No matter how Matt Perry-like I was in the 90s.
Weren't we all?
Could I be any more like Matt Perry? But just the idea that, you know, our careers now aren't just one thing. It's a bunch of things because we are a product of short attention span media. And yeah. So therefore our careers are these kind of like... I have like five weird little jobs, yes. But they make up this one career that I love.
It's true. And I will say that while it's really cool, it's exhausting.
It's very exhausting.
Because you do feel like you always have to be doing something.
Mm-hmm.
I always feel like if I don't have at least three things going, then there's something wrong. And it is exhausting, but it's also great because it's you know, I've waited 15, 20 years to be busy. And so finally, in the past few years, I've been busy. It's terrific, but I am sort of tired. And but I don't think I would want it to change or be any other way. But
boy, can you imagine what it was like to work on Cheers? Like just mid-run where it's like...
I always imagine
You kind of go in, you work from 10 to 5, and then...
No, you don't. That was shot before a live studio audience. You didn't even work 10 to 5.
No, no, but during rehearsals. You would rehearse during the week, and then they would probably shoot Friday nights or whatever night they shot. And then, you know, they work 20 weeks a year, and then they just have, like, 4 months off. And they don't do anything.
Right.
Yeah. Because they know they're coming back in the fall to their giant TV show.
But also, when you're on Cheers, you finish a 4-hour workday, and you don't have to go fucking shoot some internet video because someone did you a favor, so you need to go do theirs. You don't need to feel like
you don't have to go do a podcast.
Right. You don't have your Adult Swim project that you have to give notes on or whatever. You're good. You're getting a lot of money, and you can just go relax in Malibu.
But I think
Ted Danson was always running from podcast to podcast.
Yeah,
he would. I feel like Ted would. Ted Danson seems like the kind of guy like he would. Like he seems like a cool guy. But it's funny to hear you say like, oh, the 15 or 20-year career, it is sort of staggering to think of it in those terms. Like, when I really sit down and go, like, oh, shit, it's been a long time. But I think that's what's – I think that is the foundation of a career that will last is – rather than getting the overnight thing is if people just discover you because of Parks and Rec and then they start connecting the dots and they're like, oh, he was in this thing and he did the Piranha thing and he was in this. And oh, my God. And then they – all of a sudden realize that you've been there the whole time.
Right. Hiding in plain sight.
Hiding in plain sight, like Gus Fring.
Right.
I did. I think I said this on the show the other night, but it is very funny to me that when you think about like what a head trip it must be for the Albuquerque of Breaking Bad, where you go, hey, did you hear the chemistry teacher was a drug kingpin? What? Yeah, he had to knock off the previous drug kingpin, who was the guy who owned the chicken restaurants.
Right. That super polite guy.
What?
Yeah.
And then their lawyer was the guy from the bus stop ads and the TV. Like everyone.
That's why it really, really holds up that it became such a national story, is because not only when you connect the dots like that is it a great story to kind of email around to your friends, but when then they're connected to essentially the Bill Gates of today, it becomes front page of New York Times.
Yeah. Well, I love,
but Charlie Rose would not be on at that time of the day. I'm just saying.
He's got a point.
Poked a hole right in there.
Get Vince Gilligan on the phone.
Yeah. Vince, let's talk about Charlie Rose's air times.
Well, it was just...
I understand the public broadcasting system. They can sort of tweak with the schedule.
They can do whatever they want. And also, I'm sure it was a local affiliate.
Hey, look who just got here for the last 2 minutes of the podcast. Jonah Ray!
Good one, Adam. That's a really funny story.
Well, he's been here the whole time.
What's your favorite Sunday?
Just like you. You've been here the whole time, Jonah.
Yes.
Jonah had an audition.
Did you like some apple?
Yes.
Jonah had an audition or a meeting or something?
No, I'm serious.
I tried to grab it. You pulled it away. I was at a audition.
Take it.
All right.
Let's keep going with this bit. Okay.
Sorry. Is he going to take a bite?
Should I? Is this a thing?
No. We've all taken bites.
Yeah.
Listen, if you want to be in the club, you would take a bite. If you don't want to be in the club, just don't chew into the microphone if you do take a bite.
We're all going to press our penises against it.
None of us took a bite,
Not
Adam!
One person except me.
Fuck
so
you,
now
man!
We've kissed.
You stupid piece of shit, Jonah!
I'm sorry.
This is what you get.
He's the guest. I have to fucking go with it.
I guess that's true. You said you had an audition or something.
No, it was a meeting for the Meltdown show.
Oh,
so
nice.
So I was just with friends of yours, Mike Rosenstein and Lance Bangs.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. We were just talking about Lance Bangs.
Yeah. I was just with them.
Nice. Did they ask about Adam?
Why didn't you bring them?
because they had other things to do.
Yeah,
Lance,
what's their problem?
Yeah, Lance had to fly to a few different cities before going to someplace else.
He is always on an airplane
with
a lot of camera equipment.
Yeah, just hard drives and shit. He's flying to Anchorage, Alaska tomorrow.
Of course he is.
Yeah of course.
To like shoot some skateboarders.
Yeah, Todd Barry and some skateboarders. Uh-huh. And some, young rappers from Fairfax.
I would watch that show every day.
Todd Barry and skateboarders.
Todd Barry and some skateboarders.
Hey, man, do that half-pipe thing, man. Hey, man.
Nice. 360?
You really got that board up there, man.
Why don't you pop shove it?
Nice ollie, man.
I would love to see Todd. I'd love to find out that Todd Barry is like an awesome skateboarder and that we just didn't know.
My favorite Todd Barry story is I was at a bar in New York, and there was a girl right next to me at the bar, and he goes up to her and starts on her shoulders. Doing that. Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Excuse me?" He's like, "I'm a drummer." Do you know who Yola Tango is? And she's like, "No." He's like, "You're lost." And then walked away.
And they got married.
Yes. That's
great.
And quickly divorced.
That same night.
Yes. Also, I used to work with your wife.
Yes. My wife was Jonah's boss on the Andy Milonakis show.
I made her life real hard.
Why?
Because I was bad at my job. I was the writer's assistant on Andy Milonakis show, and she was the production coordinator, I think is the title. I can't remember.
I'm not sure.
She was in, basically, I was the guy that was supposed to kind of break down the scripts of what was happening.
She may have been, like, the line producer or something. Yeah. She's kind of sort of in charge of the parts of the production.
She was, like, you know, the one, like, that had to, you know, I had to provide her with information that she would use to make the show run smoothly, and I could not do that.
So it's your fault that the show didn't last.
It lasted a season after me. I got fired.
It did. It was two seasons, right?
Three seasons. The second season. The third season was out here. I don't know if she worked on that season.
No.
Yeah.
But what else?
Do it.
What else? What else are you bringing to the table, Jonah?
I think I brought a lot. I got a bite of an apple. You know, I told Todd Barry's story. I mentioned Lance and Mike. And then I told a thing that connected me and Adam.
So basically, you just did an entire show's worth of connecting in 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you feel good about that, Adam?
Yeah, I think he really kind of sat down prepared, polite. Took a bite.
Mm-hmm.
I'm satisfied.
We had a personal connection to you.
Very personal.
Hey, I worked with your wife.
It was like a miniature Nerdist podcast right there. Like a miniature Nerdist or Chris Hardwick interview.
Welcome to Nerdist Bites, BYTES.
Yeah, exactly. You can just take this one out and put it on its own.
And you actually take a bite.
Yes. Exactly. That's how it starts. It's that sound effect.
That's why I thought you'd call the Nerdist Bites originally.
Really?
Yeah, I thought you were really just working in a section of the podcast where somebody took a bite of something.
Guys, I like homophones. I'm not going to lie.
That's really good.
I think a good homophone.
What's that? What's a homophone?
He's scared of phones.
It's two.
Oh.
That means I only fuck phones.
Yeah.
A homophone are two words that sound the same but are spelled differently.
Mm. Okay. Mm.
Why is that not?
No, we just. Right. We just need more of Adam's audio.
I'm just. That was it.
That's what you needed, right?
That was it.
Okay, great. Do you want to plug anything?
I have a movie coming out on October 4th called ACOD, which stands for Adult Children of Divorce. It's I'm in it, and Amy Poehler, Jane Lynch, Richard Jenkins, Catherine O'Hara.
Jesus Christ.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Clark Duke, Jessica Alba. I hope I'm not leaving anyone out, but it's a really funny comedy with all those terrific people in it.
You and Clark were just in a hot tub, right?
Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yeah.
Part dos.
You've done a lot of fun stuff. Like, it's a pretty... If there's kind of a cool thing, like, even Piranha, like, that was a fucking fun... My friends Pete and Josh wrote
Piranha. Yeah. They're really cool. I didn't meet them until the premiere, but they're really, really cool guys.
Yeah. That was a fun movie.
It was a fun movie.
Yeah. When you hopped on the, I think it was a Wave Runner or something like that, you were so serious.
Yeah.
And it just really made the movie right there.
It's a perfect way to do that kind of movie. Just make it and have it be fun.
Yeah.
And have Jerry O'Connell's dick come at you in 3D.
Horrifying. I think it's tricky to market. I still haven't seen someone successfully market a horror movie that's sort of like horror comedy is really tricky to sell to the public because you want people that go see horror movies, they want to be scared. So if you tell them it's a little tongue in cheek, they're going to stay away. But if you sell it as a horror movie and they go and it's sort of campy like Piranha was, they so like it, I've never quite You know, remember Slither? I loved
it. Slither. Slither. Yeah, James Gunn.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, it's so good. But they also didn't know how to get that out there.
Yeah.
I think it's I think movies like that always end up finding
yes.
like the audience always end up finding them.
For sure.
Yeah. Because that's just a total word of mouth. Like,
yeah.
If 60% of the audience didn't get it, the 40% that did will fucking lose their minds.
Yeah.
And then I think that's where it starts.
Maybe we should go back to those post-screening movie commercials they would have. Remember, like, they would shoot people outside of a theater having just seen the movie?
Oh, yeah. Like, it was so great. Can you believe it?
I like horror, but I also really like comedy, yeah. too. This movie was for me.
It's right up my alley.
Go see this now.
Do you know Lance Bangs? I love Lance Bangs.
I love him. That seems weird. Who shot that, Lance?
Where was that? Minnesota.
He just flew there. He just flew there for that
I
one
love
shot.
Beards.
Well, thanks for being here, Adam
Oh,
Scott.
Thanks for having me. I've wanted to come for a very long time.
I know. I feel like you know, every once in a while I would bug you on Twitter, and I always feel bad about bugging people because I know that I am one of probably 100 people that week that's like, hey, Adam, will you do this thing? Hey, can you do this
no,
thing?
No, I love the show, and so I've wanted to do it.
That's the other thing about like when you do a bunch of different things and everyone's like, oh, Adam will do it because I saw him do that other
right.
thing.
He'll so, do
like,
anything.
A lot of people are like, hey, will you do this? And you have to learn how to say no to things, I'm sure.
I felt bad because I think it was Halloween like 3 years ago. My kids and I went trick-or-treating at your house.
Oh, that's right.
And we talked about doing Nerdist, and that was, I think, Three Halloweens.
Yeah,
ago,
yeah. Because I still lived. I don't live in that house anymore. But yeah, that was right up above the UCB, and there was that big kind of. It was
yes.
right at like the six.
Are you still in that shitty Franklin apartment?
That's right. And I go trick or treating in the nice neighborhoods.
I drive down to Hancock Park.
Kids, we're going up the hill. Kids, we're going up the hill.
Yeah, so I'm glad we were finally able to make it
for
work.
Sure.
And,
for sure.
And thanks for doing Talking Bad the other night.
Oh yeah, that was so fun. It was crazy having to hold on to that information all week.
Oh,
I saw the episode on Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
I had to wait.
Yeah, I can't do that.
That was tough.
You really
I haven't seen the finale yet.
But you can if you want, right?
Actually, they probably won't give it to me till Friday, but I will wait till Sunday to watch it. Because I can't. I'm afraid of either accidentally blurting it out, and I'm also a bad liar, so if people start going, does this or this happen? And I'm like, all right, no.
Yeah.
Please don't look at me.
You got to be so mad if they just air the Dexter finale.
Yes, I would be very mad about that.
Yeah.
I found that, like, at work, word spread that I had seen it on Tuesday, and people just started hovering around me. They didn't want to know anything, but they just wanted to look at me and see like what my reaction was to certain. It was
how's
really
he feeling?
Weird.
Can you tell?
Yeah, yeah.
They don't want you to say anything, but they just want to know if from your energy they can figure out what happened.
That's exactly what it was,
But it's it's gonna be over and I'm sure it's gonna be a fucking bummer.
Then what
do
we talk about? Then what am I gonna talk to anybody about?
I don't know.
What'd you think of the Breaking Bad finale?
How long can that last?
Well, years. Then we all just start watching Rizzoli and Isles, right?
No. we start talking about Ray Donovan.
You've already started talking about Ray Donovan.
I'm on the fucking ship. I'm going to be one of those guys. I'm at the forefront of
the
Ray Donovan craze that's going to happen next year.
About Ray Donovan.
Next year, there's going to be no shows for people to talk about. Dexter's gone. Breaking Bad's gone.
Mad Men will be on. No one's going to be talking about it.
There's one more season of Mad Men.
That's true. The Mad Men. But that's never been a speculative.
Everyone is going to be talking about Hostages.
You should have.
Those posters look like the Tommy Wiseau The Room poster, but with an American flag around their mouth.
You should be on Mad Men. You would make a good, like, you seem
like a 60s.
Yeah. If you just slicked your hair down, you'd be a really cool, like, young account executive that's threatening
we're
Don Draper.
To the 70s, though,
now it's 70s. Yeah, yeah, I was going to say.
You got some sideburns.
Yeah, hey, I can grow sideburns
all fucking day. All right,
you played a kind of a wheel and dealing guy in Aviator.
Yeah,
yeah, so you can do old timey.
Yeah,
that's much older,
like 1930s, 40s, I guess.
Yeah, I think that must have been there.
Does it feel any different when you go to do like the Aviator, or you're going to shoot something for Adult Swim? Does it like mentally, are you in the same kind of place, or are you like, oh, I'm going to be much more careful on this giant set with all these giant actors?
Yeah, it's totally different.
Scorsese versus Adam McKay.
Oh, it's totally different. Like I had a really small part in the Aviator, but I was there like all summer just because they would need me like for 2 days here and
film.
So I was just like, sure, I'll be there. I'll stick around. I don't care, whatever. And I would just go to that set and hang out and watch.
Oh, man.
It was amazing.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I remember absolutely everything. I didn't, like, it was all so crazy that it's, you know, it was 10 years ago now. It's weird.
That's fucking right. Yeah, that came out when I was still working at the Arclight.
No.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that in Lowell, Massachusetts in a movie theater.
Well, congratulations, Adam Scott.
Thank you. Congrats to you guys, too.
Thanks.
When are you doing another live show? Pretty soon?
When are we doing?
Well, you and I are performing in Boston on this weekend.
Yeah.
And then I'm not performing again until December out of town because I'm starting a new show and that I have to work Monday through Friday.
Talking Dead?
No, I'm doing a show for Comedy Central and it's a...
The Nerdist show.
No, that was BBC.
That was BBC America.
I'm doing a midnight...
This is the other show.
Oh, a midnight talk show.
A midnight... Yeah, it's a fake game show.
Oh, great.
So it'll be on Monday through Thursday. So
awesome.
I will not...
The game's real.
I will not... The game is real?
Yeah.
The game is real. You'd be great on it, by the way, if you ever... we'll talk about it.
Sure.
See you again.
Yeah,
I'm,
everyone
I'm,
do
already,
years,
I'm already assaulting you
everyone
with stuff.
A favor
I'm already
him.
Assaulting you with stuff. Hey, I don't want to do the thing over here. Jesus Christ, why'd I come on this podcast?
No, count me in. That sounds fun, even though I know nothing about it.
Hey, I'm shooting this video. Will you please be in my video? Hey, Adam, what do you think? That's why I feel bad. I feel like I just... That's the other problem, is that I feel like I have relationships with people where I'm the guy who's always like... Hey, do you want to do this thing? Rather than, why don't we just hang out like fucking friends?
Believe me, doing the Greatest Event episodes, the one thing I learned is asking people to come do your thing is horrible.
It's excruciating.
I hate it. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Because you don't want them to feel like, oh, really? This is when I get a call from you when you need me to come do a thing?
Yeah. My thing that I try and do is I try and ask them to do it. If they want, I don't ask them to do it. I ask them if they want to do it. But no matter what, it always just sounds like I'm just asking them to do it. And it's weird. So I just never want to ask people to do
it. Do you have people to ask for you? Do you have, did you have bookers on the show?
No. It was just me and my wife. So I just emailed everybody. And, it was totally fine, but I had never had to do that before, and so I was like, oh, wow, yeah, no wonder everyone dreads.
Okay, so just really quickly, how do those emails go? How are they structured? Is it the, hey, how's everything been going? How's the family? Will you please do this? Do you front load it with the ask, or do you bury the ask with some pretend I want to know what's going on?
Bury that ask.
I think I pretty much get right to it, just because other than just like, hey, how's it going? Just sort of a little sort of chit-chat, but I think I kind of get right to it, because... Then I have to attach links to the old episodes so they know what it is, and because also I have to explain what it is in the first place, which is you probably have to do that sometimes too, where you kind of explain what it is, and that's and then you have to just cut and paste it from the last one you did, but you
then you forgot to replace the name.
Right.
Listen, if you ever do those again, I would please let me in. I want to do The Greatest American Hero.
Oh, that is
so
such a good... Oh, yeah. Who did we have cast in that? You and... remember we did it?
Oh, it was someone... Who was?
And someone made the poster online.
They did?
Yes.
I don't know who it was. I don't know who the other person was.
It was you and... boy, oh, boy.
I have the suit.
Yeah, I remember.
You really?
I do.
I used to do that.
Boy, did I love that show as a kid.
It's fun. The show, it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yes. It's such a fucking great idea for a show, and I think the problem with the show is that... They did what would naturally happen, which is he gets really good with the suit.
Yeah.
But then it's not funny anymore because he's a real superhero.
Great theme song.
Yeah. Oh, the best. The best.
Believe it or not,
George isn't at home.
Please leave a message at the B. Who could it be?
Yeah, you used to wear that when you did Hard and Firm stuff, right?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, M-Bar.
Yeah, that's back when I used to be fat, and Patton was like, I saw it a couple years later, he was like, oh man, that was really funny, you used to do that bit with the Grace Mercury, and you had that pillow in your shirt, and I was like, that pillow was my stomach, and he was like, no, and then I watched him kind of backpedal, I watched it happen, he was like, no, man, that couldn't have been, because you, man, no, that was great.
That's funny, you were much heavier, doing stand-up and stuff.
Yeah, I was like 35 pounds heavier.
Many years ago.
Yeah, not drinking 15 beers a day and eating pizza at 3 o'clock in the morning apparently helps you lose.
Yeah, apparently not having fun makes you lose weight.
Okay, well, that's one way to look at it.
That's Jonah's way to look at it.
All right.
Oh, sorry, the next greatest event in TV history is on November 7th.
Oh, good.
Oh, there we go.
On Adult Swim.
November 7th, nice. Adult Swim, next greatest TV history.
Do you reveal what the show's going to be, or do you...
No, not till it airs.
Yeah, okay.
Or we'll try. Last time, someone
leaked it.
That was Lance.
Yeah. That and ACOD. And we're good. And when's and Parks and Rec back?
Thursday night. The 26th.
Someone's got some stuff, Adam Scott.
Got some stuff coming down the pipeline, guys. Gross. So gross.
You can't even do it as a joke for a minute.
Yeah, I can't. I can't.
It's a back metal.
Man, pipeline's full of shit.
Believe it or not, enjoy your burrito.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this. Perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients. Popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.